Good morning, boys and girls. Something is very unusual is happening this morning. Something that hasn't happened, I think, for many, many years. I think as long as I have been coming here, I don't remember this has ever happened before. Can you tell me, can anybody tell me what has happened? What has just happened? It literally happened within the last 1 minute. Yes. I came up here with a backpack. Okay. Not what I'm looking for. Yes.
We got a new year.
You got a new year. Well, all these things are true, but I'm looking for something else that just happened. Something very, very unusual. We've been coming here for many years, and there's been many new years in the past. So, anybody else? Look at the very front row. How many empty seats are there? As far as I can remember, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, for children's lesson, the first row always gets filled. Remember? So what happened this morning? You got afraid of me or what? Or are we growing older and we're looking at the way adults are acting and we're replicating their actions? Is that what it is? All right. Well, whatever the case is. Anyway, if you were to go somewhere for a long time, to live somewhere for a long time, what would you take with you? Would you take a few things with you from home? Yeah, like a toothbrush, toothpaste, maybe some extra clothes. You'd take some stuff. Now, the book bag that I have here, you know, my wife and some of my girls, they went to live somewhere for several weeks away from home, and they took a bunch of stuff with them. They had three book bags like this, and they were loaded full. And then they had some suitcases that they brought along. Because whenever you go somewhere else for a while, you bring stuff with you, right? Because if you don't bring your toothbrush and toothpaste, you'd be in trouble. Of course, you can stop somewhere and get some, but you definitely want to bring a change of clothes and some other things, right? But what would happen to you if you had to go somewhere else to live for a while and you didn't bring anything with you? Wouldn't you be in trouble? Yeah, big trouble. There's a young man in the Bible that had to go live somewhere for several years, and he was not able to bring anything with him. It's the young man who we've been studying about his life in our Bible studies on Wednesday. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'm sure you all do. It's Joseph, right? I find his life very fascinating and his story very remarkable. So, how much do you know about the life of Joseph? What I have this morning for you is I have a bunch of questions that I'm going to ask you. And you tell me how much you know about the life of Joseph. Okay? Who can tell me what is the meaning of the word Joseph in Hebrew? Does anybody know? It's a very tricky question. I didn't know myself. And I don't think this was discussed in a Bible study, unless I missed it. So how many of you know what does the word Joseph means in the Hebrew language? Okay, I'll tell you what it means. It means increase. It also means may God add. Okay, I thought that was very, very interesting what his name means in Hebrew. Who can tell me the name of Joseph's father? Yes.
Jacob.
Okay, and what about his mother? Yes. Rachel, that's right. So, Jacob and Rachel were the father and mother of Joseph. Now, who can tell me Joseph's grandfather? What was Joseph's grandfather?
Isaac,
okay, that's good. What about his great-grandfather? Who was Joseph's great-grandfather? Yes. Abraham, that's right. So Isaac was Joseph's grandfather, and Abraham was his great-grandfather. Okay? Now, how old was Joseph's father, Jacob, when Joseph was born? It's a tough one. He was 90 years old. He was an old man when Joseph was born. And now this one is a really tricky question. What country was Joseph born in? And I'm looking for the modern country where Joseph was born is, because back then that country did not have that name. But does anybody know what country was Joseph born in? Yes. Israel. Not quite, no. Yes. God's country. Well, that's right, but I'm looking for a word you probably won't know. He was born north of Israel in a country that we know today as Syria. Yeah, that's where all the conflict is going on right now. Anyway, how many brothers did Joseph have? I think a lot of you should know this. How many brothers did Joseph have? Yes. 12. Well, there were 12 brothers altogether, including Joseph. So that means Joseph had 11 brothers, right? Okay. And what gift did Joseph's father give to him? Joseph's father gave a very special gift to Joseph. Yes. A coat. Okay. I need someone to elaborate. What kind of a coat was it? Yes. A robe. Okay, that's good. I need more information. I'm going to pick you. It was a coat of many colors. Remember that? His father loved him so much that he gave him a coat of many colors. Now, the unique thing about that coat is back in those days, clothes was very, very valuable. But not only that, clothes that had color in it was even more valuable, because it was very difficult to make clothes that was colorful. But on top of things, the special thing about this particular coat of many colors is that it was a coat of many colors, meaning that it was an extremely, extremely valuable piece of clothes. Today, we have all these different dyes and all these different factories that can easily make any color clothes you want. You can buy a rainbow suit probably for less than $10 if you wanted to. But back when Joseph was alive, it was really, really difficult to make, you know, to make dyes to color clothes. So the fact that Joseph got a coat of many colors was, you know, was very, you know, remarkable. Why did Joseph's brothers hate him? You remember that Joseph's brothers hated him. But why did they hate him? Yes. They were jealous. They were jealous because Joseph's father loved him the most. And his brothers were jealous over that. That was not a very good situation. Joseph had a nickname at home. You remember what it was? What was Joseph called? What was Joseph called? Yes. A dreamer. Yes. Joseph was called a dreamer. Remember? And how many dreams did Joseph have that we know of in the Bible? Now, don't shout. Wait until I ask you to. But you're right. It is two. Now, who can tell me the two dreams that Joseph had? Tell me the first one. What was the first dream that Joseph had? Yes.
Raised up in the air.
Not quite. Not quite. Although you got an idea there. Yes, Tase. Hay bales. We're getting closer. Anybody else? Yes. You got it, yeah. Oh, wait. That's the second dream. I'm only looking for the first one. So the first dream, well, we call them hay bales, but they were called sheaves back in the day. So his first dream was they were putting these sheaves together in the field, and all of a sudden Joseph's sheaf rose up. And his brother's sheaves went around him and bowed down to him. That was his first dream. Now, what was his second dream? Anybody remember his second dream? You got a smart sister, I tell you. What is it? Yep, there were stars and moon and the sun bowed down to Joseph in his second dream. Okay. And it was because of his dreams. And because of the fact that Joseph's brothers hated him because he was the most loved son of his father, that they caught him one day and they wanted to kill him Very, very sad, but it is true. But there was a brother that did not want Joseph to be killed. And which brother? He tried to convince his other brothers not to kill Joseph. Which brother is it? Yes. Starts with an R. Reuben. Yep, you got it. It was Reuben who convinced the others to not kill Joseph. So instead of killing Joseph, his brothers threw him in what? Oh, many hands go up. Yes. In a pit. Yep. Instead of killing Joseph, his brothers threw him into a pit. And then which brother suggested to sell Joseph? He had a brother that suggested that they would sell Joseph. Yes. You remember? His name starts with a J. No. Yes.
Judah.
That's right. That's Judah. Judah suggested to other brothers that they sell Joseph. And who did the brothers sell Joseph to? They were traveling people. They probably traveled in a caravan. Yes. Traders. Well, they were traders. That's right. But I'm looking for the name of those people. Yes, that's it. Pharaoh. Well, you're getting ahead. You're getting ahead. Yes. Israelites. Not quite, but you got the first letter right. Anybody else? Ishmaelites. That's right. His brother sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites. Now, how much was Joseph sold for? You remember? Yes. 20 pieces of silver. And does anybody else remember who else was sold in the Bible for 20 pieces of silver? There was somebody else in the Bible who was sold for 20 pieces of silver. Anybody? Was Jesus sold for 20 pieces of silver? You remember? How old was Joseph when he was sold into slavery? Yes. 17. Yeah, can you imagine? You know, I think most of you here are under 13 years of age, but can you imagine in just 4 years you'd be sold into slavery? It's a terrible thing. And you'd have to go. You wouldn't be able to bring your toothbrush and toothpaste or extra change of clothes. You'd be sold and that's it. You're gone. What did the brothers brought back to their father that belonged to Joseph? So after they sold him into slavery, they took something that belonged to Joseph and they brought it back to his father. Yes. His coat, his robe of many colors, his brothers took and brought it back to the father. And what did Joseph's father think had happened to Joseph? Yes. He got killed. Yeah. Animals killed him. That's what his father thought. And to which country was Joseph taken to be sold as a slave? Yes, Susanna. Egypt. That's right. What is the name of the person who bought Joseph as a slave in Egypt? What is the name of the person who bought? Yes, Ruth. Potiphar. And who was Potiphar? What was his occupation in life? Yes. Huh? No. Yes. He was the captain of the Pharaoh's guard. That's right. And what office did Joseph eventually hold in Potiphar's household? You know, he was being a very wise steward and a wise slave. And eventually, he proved himself to be so good that Potiphar made him what? An overseer of his house. Who falsely accused Joseph, which resulted in him being thrown into prison? Yes. Potiphar's wife. That's right. And which two men in prison had dreams that Joseph interpreted? There were two men in prison that Joseph interpreted the dreams for. Yes. The chief's butler and the baker. Pharaoh's butler and the baker. How many years of his life was Joseph a slave and a prisoner? That's a hard one. How many years of his life was Joseph a slave and a prisoner? Now, I didn't know this myself, but he was 13. For 13 years, Joseph was a slave and a prisoner. Can you imagine that? Wouldn't it be a terrible thing if at 17 years of age you got taken away from your family and you became a slave and a prisoner for the next 13 years? Why was Joseph released from prison? Yes. So the reason that Joseph was released from prison was to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. What two things did Pharaoh dream about? Pharaoh had two dreams, remember? And there were two things that Pharaoh dreamed about. What are those two things? Do you remember? Yes. Okay, cows, that's one. What's the other thing? Corn. Yep. Cows and corn. What was the meaning of Pharaoh's dream? What is the meaning of Pharaoh's dream? Yes. So 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. That was the meaning of Pharaoh's dream. After Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, Pharaoh decided to make something out of Joseph. What did Pharaoh, what did Pharaoh make Joseph after he interpreted those two dreams? Yes. Prime minister. He was the second ruler in command. That's right. And which name did Pharaoh give to Joseph? That's a hard one. If you can get this one. Okay. That's right. Zaphnath-Paneah. And how old was Joseph when he became a ruler in Egypt? That's a hard one too. 25. You're 5 years off, but you're close. He was 30 years old. Joseph was 30 years old when he became ruler in Egypt. And this is a tricky one. How old was Joseph when the famine started? Let's think. Really, really hard. How old was Joseph when famine started? 37. Yep, you're good at math. Mm-hmm. And why did Joseph's brothers come to Egypt? Yes. To buy grain, that's right. And how many brothers came to Egypt to buy grain? You know how many brothers came to Egypt? You're off. You're off, but very close. Yes. 10. 10 brothers came to Egypt. Who didn't come? Which brother didn't come? Yes. Benjamin. And do you remember why he didn't come? Because his father would not want to let him go. Because Joseph, his brother, was already lost. As far as his father was concerned, he was killed. So he did not want his younger brother to go. So what did Joseph do to his brothers after they came to buy the grains? What did Joseph do to his brothers? Yes. He accused them of being spies and he threw them in prison. Remember that? Now, after releasing his brothers from prison, Joseph let them go, but kept which brother in prison? Which brother Joseph kept in prison? Yes. Simeon, that's right. And after the brothers got home, they discovered something in the sacks with the food that they got from Egypt. What did they discover in their sacks with food? Yes. Yeah, the money that they originally paid for the grain, the brothers discovered was back in their sacks when they got home. When brothers came back to Egypt the second time, which new brother came along? That should be an easy one. Yes. Benjamin. Yep, the second time Benjamin came along. And what did Joseph tell his servant to put into Benjamin's sack of food? Remember, the first time the brothers came, they ended up with their money back in their sacks. Now, the second time that they came, Joseph had something special that was put in his sack. Does anybody remember what it was? I didn't ask for you. A cup. Okay. So his silver cup was put back into Joseph's sack. It wasn't put back, it was put in it. So which brother did Joseph want to keep in Egypt after this? So the second time, the brothers are in trouble again. And which brothers did Joseph want to keep in Egypt? Yes. Benjamin, that's right. Remember that Joseph said that Benjamin must stay in Egypt now be his prisoner after the cup was found in his bag? And which brother offered himself as a replacement for Benjamin? You remember there was one brother that said, keep me, let Benjamin go. Do you remember what brother that was? No, not Levi. Yes, Judah. That's right. Judah offered himself instead of Benjamin. And then Joseph revealed himself that he was his brother's, that he was his brother. And his brothers were absolutely shocked that that was the case. But, you know, he was very overjoyed to finally reveal himself. Anyway, I have a bunch of more questions, but I think our time is running short. There's one verse that comes to my mind when I think of the life of Joseph. You know, he had a very difficult life. 13 years as a slave and a prisoner, very unfairly treated in life, and yet he rose up above all of it. And the verse that I have in mind is Romans 8:28. It says, all things work together for good who love God and are called according to his purpose. You know, no matter what happens to you in life, I can promise you, based on what Bible says, that all things will work together for good in the end. If you love God, and if you live your life according to his purpose, I can guarantee you, everything will turn out good. Not I guarantee you, Bible guarantees you. You got that? All things work together for good to them that love God and are called according to his purpose. Okay? Well, that's all I have. I do have a little gift I want to give you. Something that might remind you about Pharaoh's dreams. At least one of his dreams. Here. Let's see. You can pass this on the back row. Take one and pass it back. Here. And then you can go back to your parents. Once you get your piece, you can go back to your parents. Thank you.
Well, it is good to be here today. Isn't it good to be here today? Did you have to come to church, or did you get to come to church? Where I get to. Good, Nathan. Nathan said he get to come to church. Well, anyhow, how many of you spent some time playing this week? Did you play this week? You did? Okay, did any of you do any pretending? Cassandra, what did you do? Okay, they played with blocks, and they pretended there was a little person there. Yeah, that's good. And who else pretended? Okay, and they played. All right. Well, we're going to talk a little bit, just for a few minutes, about pretending. We have 5 grandchildren, and they come to our house, and the girls like to get these little things out. And I watch them, or I've watched them. And they hold them like this, and sometimes they give them a name, and they talk to them, and they play with them, and they say, how are you? Is this a real baby? No. What are they doing? They're pretending. They're just pretending this is a baby. Right? Is it real? No. And then my grandsons, they like to get this guy out. And when they get him out, sometimes they get this little guy out. They go, vroom, 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 vroom. Is this a real tractor? Are they pretending? Is it making real noise when they go, vroom, vroom, vroom? Are they pretending it's making noise? Yeah. And they take this car and they go, zoom, zoom, zoom. They're just pretending, huh? Well, today I brought something kind of special, and we're going to pretend. Now, I don't think you darlings over there can see past the box, can you? Should I move the big box? I'll move it over here. Okay, we're going to pretend that I have a friend. This is just a bit strange. And I put my friend in a bottle. Oh, here he is. There he is. And his name is Bob. Now, do I really have somebody in my bottle? I'm just pretending, huh? I'm just pretending. Do you see Bob in there? What color is his hat? Yes, they'll say, yeah, this is Bob, and he has a black hat. How do you like Bob? You have a black shirt, don't you? You kind of look like Bob. Yeah, so anyhow, we're going to pretend something about Bob. Now, Bob is my good friend, and you know what I like about Bob? Bob, okay, girls, when you are quiet, I'll start. And if you can hear me, touch your nose. If you can hear me, touch your nose. Oh, you can hear me. Okay. All right. Now we're ready to start again. Okay. And let me tell you something about Bob. Are you ready? Bob likes to obey me. He does. And I tell Bob he should do certain things. And one thing I told Bob, I've been playing with him all week. So I've been playing with him all week. And now, Bob, I want you to obey me. Okay, I'll obey you. Can Bob talk? No, we're just pretending. Okay, Bob, I would like you. What can we have Bob do? Yes, Nathan. Go down. Go down. Whoa. Whoa, where did Bob go? Did he obey me? Did he obey me? Yes. Okay, Bob, go up. Bob, go up. There you go. Yeah. Guess what our lesson is today about? Our lesson is about, Amanda, obeying. Obedience, obeying. Okay, Bob, let's see what you can do. Bob, I'd like you to go halfway down and stop. You think he can do it? Raise your hand if you think he can do it. And if he does it, I want you to give him a hand, all right? You know how to give him a hand? That means clap. Let me hear you clap. Okay, ready, Bob? I'm ready. Here we go. Okay, Bob, I want you to go halfway down and obey me. And stop, Bob, when you get halfway down. Whoa, there he is. Is he halfway down? Yeah. Is he obeying me?
Yeah.
He likes to obey me, doesn't he? Go to the bottom, Bob. Here. Okay. Bob, thank you for obeying me. Now, Bob, I want you to go up real slow. Did Bob obey me?
Yeah.
Okay, now, Bob, this time I want you to follow my finger. And my finger goes down, you go down. And when my finger goes up, you go up. Okay, Bob, here we go. Bob, follow me. Here. There he is. Okay, Bob. Now let's go part way up. Whoa, now go down again, Bob. Up. Down. Here. Good job, Bob. Okay, Bob, go clear to the top. Give Bob a hand. Guess what, boys and girls? My Bob, who likes living in this, has something else he can do. This is really, really neat. Now, who has a pair of scissors in their pocket? Chad? Okay, well, come on up here, Chad. You come up here. And, Chad, we are pretending today, so you come over here. And here's how you pretend scissors. Can you go like that? Let's see. Good. And if I say cut something, you cut it like that. You have it? Okay, bud. Now, listen. I have an imaginary string. This is so, so neat. It's on the bottom of my bottle. And when I pull my string, it pulls Bob down. Watch. Okay, now cut my string. There he goes. Thank you, thank you. Good job. You can sit down. So Bob really knows how to obey me, doesn't he? He's very obedient, isn't he? So, who can tell me what our lesson's going to be about today? Dase? Obedience. Right, we're going to talk about obedience today. We're going to talk about obedience today. Okay. Geneva, what's our lesson going to be about today? Yes, I like the way Geneva pays attention. Yeah. And Bob, you know, usually he does obey. Generally he obeys. But if I dump all the water out, he stops obeying. But usually he obeys. Yeah. Okay. That's a good idea. Okay. Are you Connor?
No. Carson.
You're Carson. I can't keep you too straight. Carson has a wonderful idea. He would like to see Bob do things he's not supposed to do. Raise your hand if you want to see Bob disobey me. Okay, Bob, you've got to pretend. Okay, Bob, I want you to stay at the top. Don't come down, Bob. Don't come down. Oh, look at that. Is he obeying me?
No.
No, is he being naughty?
Yeah.
He should get in trouble, huh? Why is it so much fun that he's naughty? We really are delighted with that one. Okay, Bob, go halfway down. Oh. Okay, Bob, don't go all the way up. Just go halfway up. Whoa. Oh, Bob. Yeah, I see it's very delightful to disobey. That just about ruins the whole lesson today. Now, when we disobey, it's not funny, is it? It's not funny at all. So we want to be very, very, very careful that we don't. All right? You know, there are several people in the Bible. We could name a lot of people in the Bible that obeyed God. Can you name one person that obeyed God and listened to what God said, Craig? Name one person that obeyed God. Exactly. And what did God say? Noah, build an ark. And did Noah do it? And what happened? His family, yeah. Carson?
It flooded,
and his family was all saved, and he was blessed. And Genesis chapter 12, Abraham told God told Abraham to do what? David? Yes, God told Abraham to sacrifice his son, but he also told Abraham to do something, to go somewhere. Where was he supposed to go? Cassandra. To a mountain? To another land. To a foreign land. Right, to a foreign land, to another country. And Abraham did. And Abraham obeyed God. And because Abraham obeyed God, he was rewarded. And he got something. He got God's promise. God promised him a nation, many, many people. And God blessed him. And God told Noah to build an ark, and God blessed him. What does it mean to be blessed by God? What does that mean? What's it mean to be blessed by God? Ruth Ann, what's it mean to be blessed by God? Are you blessed by God? Okay, can you tell me how? She has godly parents. That is a blessing. David, how about you? Are you blessed of God? How are you blessed of God? Okay, God has given him a warm house. His house is not cold. Right. God gives us many, many blessings. And Paul obeyed God. Joseph and Mary, they obeyed God. And you know, obedience is a wonderful thing. And if you obey God, and if you obey your parents, you will be happy. The Bible tells children that you are to obey your parents. In Ephesians 6, 1 to 3, it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Okay, why should you obey your parents? Why should you obey your parents? Someone tell me, Drew, why should you obey mom and dad? I'm sorry? Right. Because it's the right thing to do. It's right to obey your parents. Now, I drive a car. Is it right for me to obey the law? Right. Because I could have an accident or cause an accident. So, God says, Children, obey your parents, for it is right. And he also says in that same verse in Ephesians 6, honor your father and mother. Honor your father and mother because it will be well with you if you do. Okay, honor your mother and father because it'll be well with you if you do that. Okay, why should you honor your father and mother? Jordan? Michael, you're next. Jordan, why should you honor your father and mother? Okay, what? No, it is right, but that isn't what the Bible says. It says, honor your father and mother, and it will be well with you. Jordan, why should you honor your mother and father? Good, it'll be well with you. Now, I'll tell you a story. When I was a little kid, probably 5 or 6 years old, several of us slept, there were 8 of us, and several of us slept in the same bed. And the rule was, if one of you get in trouble, you all get in trouble. And I remember my parents coming in, and somebody was playing around in the bed, wanting to jump in the bed or fall out of the bed and be disobedient. Remember, be disobedient. And my parents would say, everybody turn over. And we'd have to roll over on our little bellies. And they had a yardstick. And they went, whack, whack, whack. We all got a good whack. Was that well with us? No, were we obeying? Was I obeying my parents? Things were not well with me. All right, but God says, obey your parents, and things will be well with you. Now, did you ever, ever disobey your parents? Anybody ever do that? Dase did. Okay, some of you did. Chad never did. What a good boy. He probably does it now. Michael, he doesn't know. Did you ever disobey? He doesn't know. He probably didn't very much. Well, somebody who disobeyed, I want you to tell me the story. Who disobeyed their parents? Yes. What did you do, Drew? He did something bad, but he forgets. Okay. Some of you were not allowed to run on the platform after church. And some of you, a long time ago, used to disobey. And you would go up there and run, and I'd see your mom or dad come up and take you down and talk to you. And things didn't go well with you, did it? Okay, so if you obey your parents, you obey authority because it's right, and then you obey and it will be well with you. And then it says honor. Honor your mom and your dad. And honor means love and respect. And you will have a long life. You will have a long life if you honor your mom and dad. Who wants to do things that are right? Carson? Oh, everybody does. Amanda wants to. Mm-hmm. Geneva wants to. David wants to. Jordan wants to. Michael wants to. Christopher doesn't know. Okay, who wants things to be well with you? Oh, yeah. You want things to go well with you. You don't want to turn over and get the whack. Who wants to live a long life? So what do you do to get all this? To get all these things, what do you do? Cassandra. Obey your parents. Now I want to show you something that's really, really interesting. Okay? All right. So if you obey your parents when you're young, then that will teach you to obey God, because you learned obedience. It's so much easier to obey God after you've learned to obey your parents. We want to obey God. How many of you have rules at home? Okay, I'll tell you a rule that we have at my house, and I told my wife this so many times, even this week. I always put things right back the way they're supposed to be. I always do that. She goes, mm-hmm, you always do that? I always do that. I always put things back. So this morning, we were talking about Jordan Nolte back there. Jared Nolte, where's Jared? Jared's not here today. I think he's with Dad on the truck coming home from Florida. But anyhow, Jared has a birthday this week. So I wanted to give Jared a little something. So we have some drawers in the bedroom, and you open those drawers, and there's books, and there's erasers and pencils, and just little things in there. And Ruby was looking for something. I said, oh, I'll find something. So she was sitting on the bed, and I sat down beside her, and we pulled the drawer. I pulled out all the books. I said, what about this book? No, what about this book? No, what about this? What about that? So then we finally found something. Ruby found something. I said, oh, that's perfect. And then I get up and walk away, and it was such a mess. And she says, you always put things back the way you found them? You always put things back exactly the way you're supposed to put them back? Exactly. Yeah. Well, I didn't do what was right, did I? No, I should have done what was right, and I should have put everything back. So Ruby did. She put all the books back and everything back just right. So, if you want things to go right, or this is the right thing to do, it's not the wrong thing, it's the right thing to do to obey your parents, things will go well with you, and you'll live a long life. So who can tell me something at home? You have a rule, and you didn't follow it. Cassandra. Oh, I used to love to jump on the bed. Yeah, when I was little, wee little, I was jumping on the bed, and somebody taught me a poem. You know what it said? Three little monkeys jumping on the bed. One fell off and broke his head, hurt his head. They went to the doctor, and the doctor said, see what you get for jumping on the bed. Right, that was a rule in our house. Don't jump on the bed. Have you ever jumped on your bed, Cassandra? Did you get in trouble? Was it the right thing to do? No. Was it well with you when you were getting in? No. No. Were you obeying your parents? But you're a big girl now and you don't jump on the bed. How about one of you boys? Michael, he's grinning from ear to ear. There must be something he did at home that he wasn't supposed to. Michael, I'm so glad you're feeling better. Last time I saw you, you had the flu. Okay, Michael, what did you do? Go ahead. Think of one thing that you did that you weren't supposed to do. Okay. Anybody? Noah, was there anything at home you ever did you weren't supposed to do that you would like to share? Okay. He doesn't remember anything. Okay, Carson. Okay, Dad. Take a deep breath because this ought to be good. Okay, Carson. What did you do?
Jumping on the bed.
Oh, you jumped on the bed too. Was it a good thing to do? Were you obeying your parents? No, it was naughty, naughty. We want to obey our parents. Now, when we obey our parents, we want to think of a word. I don't have an eraser here. But we want to think of this word. I have a clean tissue somewhere in the bottom of my... Yeah, here's a clean tissue. I'll use it. We want to think of this word. I'm going to write this word. See how many of you can read it. Okay, here we go. Say the letter when I write it. I'm going to write it up and down. I. What's the word? Ice. And it's cold. Ice is cold. So when we obey, this is what we do. We think of ice. All right? Who knows what the I stands for? We obey immediately. When Dad says, Michael, would you please take out the trash? He doesn't say, later, Dad. He doesn't say to himself, well, I'm going to finish playing and then I'll take it out. No, Michael does it immediately. We always obey immediately. We only have to be told once. And we always do it how? How do we obey? How do we obey? Cassandra, when Mama says, make the bed, what does Cassandra do? I don't know. I'm not much of an artist. There's Cassandra. What does she do? Right. She does it cheerfully. And she has a nose too. There we go. Yes. She does it cheerfully. We do it immediately. We do it cheerfully. And we do it exactly. Just right. So when we empty the trash, we look back in the trash and make sure everything is out of the trash. We do it exactly. So how do we obey? Immediately. Say it. Cheerfully. And exactly. Colossians 3:2 says, obey your parents, for this pleases God. How many of you want to please God and make God happy? All right, we want to please God. And there's a promise here. It says, obey your parents, and that'll please God. You know, we've been talking about obedience, but what's the real issue here today? What is underneath all of this? All of this. What's the real issue here today? We will do it immediately, and we will do it cheerfully, and we will do it exactly if something's right. What has to be right? Look over here, boys. What has to be right? It all comes from the heart. If your heart is right, and you're loving God, and you love Mom and Dad, you will obey immediately, cheerfully, and exactly. I love to obey my parents and God. And obeying your parents is the first step in learning to obey God. Colossians 3:20. Obey your parents, for this pleases God. How many of you are going to try to obey your parents a little bit better? That's good. And if your brother or sister doesn't obey, you can encourage them and you'll say, you know, you should obey. We should obey Mom and Dad. What are some things in our church we should obey? Cassandra. Don't talk when the preacher is preaching. Don't talk during church. That's good. What else? Any other good rules? Yeah. Good, Carson. Don't run in church. Right. Brother Ted tells that to Carson over and over and over and over. And Carson has learned that. And as soon as he sees Brother Ted, he walks. What a good boy. He comes tearing around up here where I'm sitting, and he sees me, and he walks. Why, good boy, Carson. Don't run in church. And don't talk when the preacher is talking. Yes. Her dad says, walk in church like that. That can be our little secret signal. If you see somebody going like this, what's it mean? Walk in church. Right here. Why should we walk in here? Why not run around? Carson?
Obey.
Good. He says, obey. You want to obey the people that are older. And it's disruptive. It's disruptive when I'm trying to talk to somebody and a child comes running in front of me and it's noisy. And sometimes after the service, you want to get up and you want to think what the preacher said, or you want to share with somebody and talk about what they said. But you can't do that with a bunch of children running around. So we don't run around. Any other rules? Yes? Don't go to the gym before you're supposed to. That's a good rule. Don't go to the gym until you're supposed to go. Yes. Don't color on the walls. No, we don't want any coloring on the walls. We want to respect it. Here's a rule that I'm thinking of. On Wednesday night and other times, don't play in the nursery. Why shouldn't you go in and play in the nursery? Yes. It's noisy. But in the nursery, there's a big curtain. And guess what I heard? That somebody has to put that curtain up every once in a while and repair it because children are hiding behind it and then pulling on it and hiding behind it. until it rips and comes down. Don't play in the nursery and don't go near the curtain. Any other rules? Yes. No hitting each other. That's a good rule. Yeah. How about some positive rules? Like, when you go to the bathroom, wash your hands. When you come out and we have a fellowship meal, do we keep the table and the floor clean? I used to walk through the fellowship meal and I would see all kinds of food on the floor and all pieces of bread and peas and everything on the, but I don't see it anymore. Everyone's doing very well, keeping their area clean. Very good. Okay. I need to ask this one on the end. Honey, what's your name? I forgot you. What is it? Michaela, what was our lesson about today? Obeying, obedience. And what's one thing you learned? What's one thing you... Anybody learn anything? Amanda, what did you learn? To obey your parents. Okay, anybody else learn anything? Carson.
To listen and not hit each other.
To listen. What did you learn? Not complain. That's good. That was the last lesson. How many of you are not complaining anymore? No more complainers. Remember? That's right. Don't complain. That's good. Anybody else learn anything? Well, if you go home and you listen and you don't complain and you obey your parents, I think you've learned enough. Now, I want you to show me how you can quietly walk back to your seats. Okay, you may go.
Well, good morning, children. You all excited to be at children's lesson this morning? Most of you don't look very convinced about that. All right, well, I don't have too much of an object lesson this morning. I'm sorry, I kind of got in short notice. Somebody wanted to switch out with me that I found out Friday morning. But we're going to go through a Bible story that used to be one of my favorite ones. It's going to be in 1 Samuel 17. Can anybody tell me which story it's going to be? Nope. Which one? The Bible story that we're going to read this morning is in the is in 1 Samuel 17. It's in the chapter of the Bible. Do any of you know which one it is? Okay. Well, let me find it. All right, I'm going to give you a hint. It was a battle between a really big man and a normal man. All right, now somebody knows what it is. What do you think, Caleb? You're right. All right, first we're going to read this chapter, and then we're going to go over some things of the story and see if we can pull a lesson out of it, okay? So we're going to start in verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shochoh, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shochoh and Azekah and Ephes-Damim. And Saul, the men of Israel, were gathered together and were pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley in between them. So you think about this. There's two mountains on each side. There's one army over here. There's an army over here, and they've got a big valley in the middle. So they got all this space. They can sit there and see each other, but they're too far away to do anything. And there went out among the champions of the camp of the Philistines, named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in a span. Now, from my understanding, it's about 9 feet tall, so let me see. It's probably about... Why don't you come up here? That's probably about right. So that's probably... Do you think you could win me in a fight? What do you think? I think so Goliath is... If you're David, then I would be about Goliath size. Just think about that for a little bit. All right, you can go sit down. Thank you. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head. He had a metal helmet. Do you think that's heavy? Brass is a pretty heavy metal. He had a helmet made out of brass. And he was armed with a coat of mail. Do you know what mail is? It's a coat of, like, it's... Go ahead. Yeah, it's like steel links, kind of. It's real tight together so that you can't get an arrow or a spear or anything through it. And the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass, and he had heaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass upon his shoulders. So first off, this is a big guy, and now he's well protected yet, too. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. And one, guess what? He had a guy helping him, too. He had a guy carrying his shield. His shield was so big. And this is a big dude. And he stood and cried under the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man. He said, choose you out of your men of a thousand, out of your thousand men. Choose any one of you can come down here and fight me. I'll take any of you on. I don't care. Now you come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then we will be your servants. So he said, all you got to do is kill me. I got this whole army behind me. All you got to do is take me down, and you guys win the battle. He was a very proud guy. He said, if you're able to fight with me and to kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you should be of our servants. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So this one man made the whole army of Israel scared. None of them would get out there. Now David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had eight sons. And the man went among men, for an old man in the days of Saul. And the three oldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to battle. And the names of his three sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and next unto him Abinadab, and the third Shema. And David was the youngest, and the three eldest followed Saul. So the three oldest sons of Jesse were fighting in this battle. David was the youngest one, so he didn't get to go. He had to stay home. And David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. So he's just staying at home doing his job, taking care of the sheep. And the Philistines drew near every morning and every evening and presented himself for 40 days. That's a little over a month. So every day, these armies are sitting up here in these hills, and every day this Philistine's coming down and challenging this army and saying, send whoever you want down here. If any of them could beat me, you guys win the battle. Well, guess what? Nobody went down. And Jesse said unto David his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how they thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul, and they of all the men of Israel, were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. So his father told David, take his brothers some food and the men of the army there. And David rose up early in the morning, and left the sheep with a keeper, and took and went, as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight and shouted for the battle. For the Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion of the Philistines of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines and spake according to the same words. And David heard them. So this guy's been coming for 40 days. Well, now David's here delivering some food, and he hears this guy come out and make his challenge. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, have ye seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine? And taketh away the reproach from Israel. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the man. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. So this is David's oldest brother. And he doesn't like what David's saying. David says, come on, we're the armies of the living God. Why aren't we going out here and fighting this battle? Well, David's oldest brother says, yeah, what do you know? And his anger was kindled against David. But why camest thou down hither? With whom hast thou left those sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart, for thou art come down that might see the battle. He said, David, you shouldn't even be here. You should be out taking care of your sheep. You just want to come to see to watch the battle. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another, and spake after the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." So David said, "I'll go fight with him. I'm not scared. I've got God behind me." And Saul said to David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth." He said, and Saul was the leader of the army of Israel, and he said, "You can't go. You're just a little guy. Goliath is this huge warrior." And David said unto Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put a helmet of brass upon his head, and also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword about his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, "I cannot go with these things, for I have not proved them." And David put them off him, so he took all his armor off. He said, "I can't fight with these. I don't know how to use them. I've never done this before." And he took his staff in his hand, and he chose him 5 stones out of the brook, and he put them into a shepherd's bag, which he had even in his grip, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistines. And the Philistines came on and drew near David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistines looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, "Am I a dog that you comest to me with staves?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said unto David, "Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air, and to the beasts of the earth." And then said David to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thy head from thee, and I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." So David might not have had all these weapons that Saul had. He didn't have a big shield and a big spear and a big coat, and he wasn't a very big guy, but he had one thing that Goliath didn't have. He had faith in God, that God could win this battle for him. "And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass, when the Philistines arose, and came and drew nigh to meet David, and David hasted and ran towards the army to meet the Philistines. And David put his hand in his bag, and took thence a stone, and slung it, and smote the Philistines in his head." Now, I think that would be pretty hard to do. I don't know for sure what David's sling like, but this is a sling I had made back a long time ago when I was little, and I think it was something like this. He put his stone in that pouch, and he swung this thing around and around. That's not much when you're going against a guy with a big spear and a guy holding a shield. And David put his stone in there, and he swung that thing around and around and around and around. And there went the stone. And his aim, that stone went right and hit the Philistine right in the one spot that he didn't have protection. He had this big helmet, he had a shield, he had all his gun, but his forehead was open. And that stone went right there. Yeah. "And smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine, and took his sword, and drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him, and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled." All of a sudden, they were scared. This one big dude that they sent out that said nobody could beat him, all of a sudden, he wasn't there anymore. And they all took off running. They were scared. And all of a sudden, well, this is the funny part. "Once they all took off, and the men of Judah, of Israel and Judah, arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until they come to the valley, to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way." All of a sudden, this army that's been sitting here for the last 40 days that were scared of this one Philistine that nobody would go fight, all of a sudden, they all take off after the rest of this army, and they're not scared anymore. "And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem. Then he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw David go forth against the Philistines, he said unto Abner, the captain of the host, 'Abner, whose son is this youth?' And Abner said, 'As thy soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell.' And the king said, 'Inquire thou whose son the stripling is.' And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son art thou, young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of thy servant Jesse the Bethlehemite." So, the lesson I want you children to be able to take away from this today is that no matter, David was the youngest in his family, he was the least important, his brothers looked down on him, they all told him, "Yeah, you shouldn't be here, you should just be doing your lonely job out by yourself." But David was the one of those brothers that had the faith that God could win that battle for him. And he was the only one of that entire army that was willing to go out because of his faith in God. So the lesson I want you children to learn, that it doesn't matter how little we are, how important we might think we are, we always have a God up there that is willing to help us out. So no matter what battle we might come up against or what might seem that it's really hard in life to do, I want you to remember that we always have a God that's willing to help us. And He's personal to every single one of us. So we can always lean on that to win our battles. All right, thank you, children. Now you can go back to your seats.
Good morning, children. It is so nice to see you all this morning. Last Sunday, we weren't here. We were somewhere else, and I missed our people here. It is so nice to be with all our friends and all the people that we are used to seeing and enjoying. And this morning, I have the privilege of sharing a lesson with you. Let's first have a word of prayer, okay? Let's pray. Thank you, Father, for these dear children. Thank you for your love. Thank you for everything else that you give us so abundantly. We have so much. Bless this children's lesson. Use the words I speak to give them light. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. I'm going to start with a story. It's quite an unusual story. It started with a young man in 1984. You may have never heard his name. His name was Christopher Knight. And as far as I know, he's still alive. And if he ever gets to listen to this recording of the children's lesson, I hope he's blessed. I hope he feels the love of God. But it started in 1984. He was 20 years old. He worked in a shop where they installed alarm systems in houses and cars. He worked there for about a year, and one day he disappeared. He just plain disappeared. His neighbors didn't know much of the family. They said later that the family just kept very quiet. They kept to themselves. And this young man disappeared. Nobody knew it, besides those he worked with. And they just, well, he's gone. I don't know what happened. And the family never said anything to anybody. They never called the police. They missed him. I'm sure they felt sad. And they looked for him, but they couldn't find him. Many, many years later, people found out what happened. Quite a long time later. And I'll tell you the story. One day he decided to just get in his car and go for a drive. And he drove all the way from New Hampshire down to Florida. And he turned around and drove up to Maine. And he drove way back in the woods. He got on a little dirt road. And he drove back the dirt road. He got to a smaller road, and he drove back that road. He got to a little trail, and he drove back that little trail a little bit. He parked the car, put the keys between the seats, never locked the car, and he just started walking. Had a little backpack, had a little bit of food, and he walked. And after a few days, and after walking many miles and eating berries and whatever else he could find, he came to this little spot that he thought would make a perfect home for himself. And that's where he made his home. And this was in Maine. And he lived there in a tent. Set up a little tent. And he lived there for guess how long? I'll tell you how long after a bit. But I'll tell you, living in Maine, in the outdoors, gets quite difficult in wintertime. It's a lot colder than here. Usually, there's snow on the ground from November to April. And it gets very cold. But that's where he lived. And he didn't take much with him to the woods. So how was he going to survive? Christopher Knight was a very smart man. He knew how to survive in the wild. And he started doing something that he shouldn't have done. But in order to stay alive, he started stealing. He found this place that was in some very thick woods, in between some big stones, very hidden. But just a couple hundred yards from cabins, hunting cabins, vacation cabins. There's a big lake there, and there's many, many cabins, little houses all the way around the lake. And he started at night. He would go and get the things he needed. And I'll tell you how long he did that. He did that for 27 years. People started wondering, what's happening with my stuff? Just little things would disappear. For example, do you know what this is? Christopher Knight never made a fire as far as a campfire. He never made any kind of fire to heat himself. But you're going to need some water to drink in the long winter months. So he stole about 100 of these in 27 years to melt snow. So he would have some water to drink and to clean himself up with. And what would you do in the woods for all those years? Well, he took about 1,000 or so books. And he took a radio. And sometimes he took little electronic games, but he made sure to take the old ones so the children wouldn't miss their new games. And he was able to get by with that for 27 years. Finally, there was a game warden that decided that he's going to make this his project to find out where is all this stuff going. And he put out cameras. He had a system that would call his phone if the cameras took a picture. And one night, Christopher Knight walked into a house to take some ham and cheese. Let me back up a little bit. I want to tell you, what would you do in the wintertime when you were staying hidden like he was? You're never going to do this. But Christopher Knight, he didn't want to leave any tracks. So he would take all the food in the summer months up to November that he would need all the way to April. So he wouldn't need to leave his camp all winter long. He would get up at 2:30 at night, and in the coldest hours of the morning, he would pace around his camp back and forth, back and forth, back and forth to stay warm. He had a bed in the tent. He had probably about anything he wanted. And then one day, the game warden's phone let him know that somebody was in the house over there, and he quick went over, and they found this man. They were very surprised at how clean he was, how orderly he looked. For 27 years, he said one word. Never talked to himself. He said one word. One day in the woods, on a little trail, a hiker came by and he said, "Hi." Nothing else for 27 years. When the police came and got him, people felt so bad for this man In one way, they admired him to be able to live that long in the woods. And he did only steal to survive, so they felt bad for him. They really didn't want him to be in prison very long. So 6 months is all he spent in prison for all those thousands of things he stole. Now, people were quite amazed when they found out about this. They just didn't think it was going to be possible for this story to be true. So hundreds of people, they call them journalists, wanted to write a story about him. Hundreds of them came and wanted to talk to him. And no, he didn't want to talk. Finally, one man won his heart, and he opened up, and he shared enough for a story to be written and a book to be written, hoping that once people get the book, they'll leave him alone. And today he lives in a place far in the woods by himself. Few people know where he is, but I don't think he's stealing. I think he's living a better life than he was. But I just chose to tell you all this to make a lesson. I want you to stop right now and just look around. Look at your friends back and forth and behind you and in front of you. Look at all your friends. And think about how very blessed you are to have so many friends in your life. Think about your parents, your grandparents, uncles, aunts, other people you know and love. Think about how blessed you are. God made us to want to be with people. He made us to know His love, that we could know Him, know His love, and express that love with one another. I don't know what happened in Christopher Knight's life that made him want to just not see people. But I think if the love of God would have been in his family, I think he wouldn't have wanted to do that. Do you think I'm right? Something wasn't the way it should have been. Children, I just want you to think about your relationships, especially in your family, with your siblings, with your parents, and how good it is when you have good relationships. And what can we do to do our part? One thing, if you struggle with something, if you have a hard time with something, talk about it. Talk about it to your parents. Talk about it, especially to your parents, but you can to others also. It's very sad when children grow up and don't want to be with others, don't want to be with their family. We all have good friends, right? I think every one of you does. You have some good friends and some others that maybe you don't spend as much time with. But I want you to think about how to have good friends and how to just be friends to anybody, to all the people sitting around you. You know, sometimes when we talk about our friends or when we interact with our friends, we can do some things that are hurtful. Maybe we don't think about it. Maybe we don't realize it's hurtful. But we might say things like, "Oh, he's my best friend," to someone else that thought he was a very good friend of yours. Now, all of a sudden, he's feeling like, "Oh, I'm not his best friend." Or we might want to just be with our best friend, and then somebody else comes along. They want to talk too. But we just wanted to be with the one friend. So we might run away. We might say something unkind. Those things can be very hurtful. I want you to think about it. To think about just being everybody's friend and not cutting people off or saying unkind things or not wanting to be certain people's friends. Does that make sense? We want to make sure we have good friends, good relationships. The Bible says for a man to have friends and for boys to have friends or girls to have friends, we must be friendly. So we want to be friendly to everybody. Did you know that the Bible says God is love? Did you ever hear that from the Bible? It says God is love. So for us to have true love in our hearts, we need God in our hearts. When we have God in our heart, we have love in our heart, love for God and love for one another. The Apostle Paul wrote the book of Romans, and he was very thrilled with the love of God. I want to read a couple verses to you, what he wrote about the love of God. But first I realize I forgot to show you a picture of this place where Christopher Knight lived. It was in the woods. He had a little tent. He had some trash cans. All those hundreds of tanks. I already showed you that picture. All those hundreds of tanks, maybe not hundreds, but 100, whatever it was, are buried here somewhere. He kept his tent very orderly. So maybe you think that was kind of adventurous, living 27 years in the woods, saying one word to one person. But I'm going to tell you, that would be quite miserable. I think it would be. God didn't make us to be that way. He made us to be relational, meaning we like being with people, and we enjoy that. We love people. The Apostle Paul wrote in Romans 8:37-38, he says, "Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us." That means that we can win if we are with God. God has loved us, and we can win in life. Then he says, "For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord." So if we love God, nothing and no one can force us to come away from God and to not love God. That is everything. You can go back to your parents.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Effort of Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Effort of Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.